Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And good morning. My name's Dave Kubikian.
Good morning. My name is Dan Glasser.
Hi, Dan. Dan and I are two attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we are here in some combination every single weekend talking to you guys about things like estate planning and elder law. When Dan's here, we dabble in real estate a little more than normal, but we cover everything from powers of attorney to wills and trusts and so on. We'd love for you to be a caller on our show asking all your questions at 518-476-5900. We have offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston, cover everything in New York. And good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am sitting, staring at a wonderfully beautiful lake as the sun's coming up, and it's very quiet, and I'm in my car. And it's not a bad place to be. It's very peaceful. I feel a lot of zen right now.
I like it. I am not staring at a lake. I'm staring at a bunch of beautiful green grassy fields and soccer nets.
Oh, yeah. So is it for child one or two or three or four or five or six that were here at the soccer field?
This is number three.
Number three. Okay.
This is number three.
Does number three have a name, or do we just call number three number three?
We actually call them by numbers.
Oh,
you know,
well, it makes sense.
Hey, you, number three, time for dinner.
If you said, hey, you, it'd be by letters, but that's neither here nor there. Dan,
right.
I barely see you these days. That's a sign that the office is very busy. It makes me sad that we don't get to hang out a little more often. I would imagine that real estate is still incredibly busy as it was for most of 2021.
It's busy. There was a point right around Labor Day, end of August, early September, it kind of slowed up a bit, and we all came up for air, and then it's starting to get busy again, which is, of course, a good thing.
For sure. On our end, Dan, it's been a little chaotic, controlled, but chaotic. And, just lots of people coming in for a lot of the normal things that we talk about and wanting to get ahead of difficult decisions, years, if not decades down the road, and basic estate planning, elder law planning. And then we've also had a number of just really awful fact patterns that have been really difficult to deal with, to be honest with you, because you're meeting with really nice, good people that are going through a lot of bad things. And
right.
In the absence of callers today, I was going to kind of talk about, I did a screenshot of my calendar this past week, staring at these different appointments, and there's some themes within these appointments, even though the facts of what people were dealing with were somewhat drastically different. And, I'll just get into it now because normally what happens is I start to say something and then Ben interrupts us and says that we have a phone call, which we would love to have, 518-476-5900. But, Dan, twice this week I had appointments in the morning in our office that resulted in me going to a hospital in the afternoon of that same day. As a rather large emergency, we normally don't just say, hey, yeah, sure, it sounds good, we'll travel wherever. And both instances, Dan, were the document I went to the hospital with was the same document. Both were really difficult circumstances. One, a long-term care situation where we know someone will be around for a while, and the other one was, unfortunately, a short-term care situation where that person will not be with us likely through the year. And in both instances, that basic document that I ran over there with was called the power of attorney, which I know you deal with a lot in the real estate world. And in the estate planning elder law world, that document is the most important document that we deal with, because when it's done correctly, more on that later, when it's done correctly, it will give someone who you trust the power to do the things that you would have done if you were, for example, in, you know, Samaritan Hospital Room 403. Because you can't do those things when you're in Samaritan Hospital Room 403, and you're going to need an agent. And when we talk about people who may lose capacity at some time because of things like dementia, or when we talk about people who are never going to leave the hospital, the only way that transactions can happen is by using that power of attorney. And a lot of people out there may say, well, it sounds like there, you know, there's a lot of other things to worry about than a power of attorney. That seems a little superficial. It's the logistics of life, being able to pay bills or being able to move assets around to protect them, or to make sure that your loved ones are the ones that are going to get money if you pass. And in the absence of doing a lot of planning, Dan, you really, really, I mean, in addition to planning, you should have the power of attorney. But in the absence of really good, you know, estate plans and elder law plans, you absolutely need to have a power of attorney. And the thing is, if you don't take the step of creating a plan, normally you're not taking that step of creating a power of attorney either. So it's usually all or nothing in our world.
Yeah, planning is definitely key for our fields.
Now, I've transacted in the real estate world with you as my attorney, and where Isabel has been the only one in the room with you signing documents, and she had a power of attorney. I've signed documents for my in-laws as power of attorney before. They're pretty common in the real estate world as well, right?
Yes, that is true. You know, in order to accommodate everyone's schedules, because we've got sellers, buyers, attorneys, a title company, the bank, sometimes it's tough to line up a time and a day for everyone to be in one room for a closing. You know, there are some bosses out there that don't give their employees a lot of flexibility with scheduling. So the power of attorney is a great option to utilize. And, you know, for sellers, we also give them the option to sign the paperwork in advance of the closing, so that they don't have to go to the closing. And then I just ask that they be available via phone, you know, during the closing in case I have to reach them for something. But, you know, we do whatever we can to get the deal done.
Yeah. But in your world, the powers of attorney are usually a little more limited. I mean, if it's a spouse signing for a spouse, it may be, you know, the form of power of attorney I'm also referring to, with all the initials in all the right spots, to allow everything from real estate to banking to some heavy duty moving of assets and creating trust and so on. I would imagine when you're looking at a power of attorney, maybe they're just initialing the real estate item, and maybe they're specifying not just real estate but this particular transaction, a purchase or sale related to this specific address.
You're so smart, Dave. That is exactly correct. Yeah. So I actually had a closing yesterday where we did just that. One of the spouses could not attend, so they had a power of attorney. So it's, of course, you know, crucial that from a title standpoint, I have to have the original power of attorney, because it has to be recorded, because future title searchers down the road, be it 5, 10, 20 years from now, we're going to want to have proof that Joe did have the authority to sign for Sue at this closing. So we would record that power of attorney. Of course, there is a fee to record documents with the county clerk. And then, you know, and then it's, of course, recorded and returned to wherever it needs to go, but once it's recorded, what happens to the original doesn't much matter. But you're right, it does need to specify, it's called a limited POA, you know, the transaction, what it's being used for.
And the reason I'm kind of leading it into this direction, Dan, is because sometimes real estate attorneys who can do a power of attorney to help a real estate transaction take place, they'll sometimes do powers of attorney, and it's not designed for a specific purchase or sale. It's just, hey, yeah, I can do a power of attorney for you. And I'm not saying you do that, Dan. I'm not making any accusations. This isn't, you know, you're not on trial here. It's not
yes,
you.
Yes,
a lot of, actually, Dan, this is an intervention. Ben, can you join us for a second? Okay. What happens with powers of attorney is that if it's not done the right way, if it doesn't give the right powers, we're limited to what the power of attorney says. It sounds like law 101, right? We're limited to what the documents say. And so sometimes when we meet with clients on the estate planning and elder law side, like I did this week, I'll say, do you have a power of attorney? And they'll say, yes. And I don't need a new power of attorney. I just did it. I just did one a year ago. And I say, well, I need to see it. And as soon as I hold the power of attorney, Dan, I already know whether I need a new one, because if it's less than about 8-9 pages, I know it's not the right one or it doesn't have the right details in it. The power of attorney can be relatively short if we're going to do just the basic powers. But if we want powers that are more in line with estate planning and elder law, we want the power to move some money around in a pinch and be able to do create a trust, for example, or to move assets to avoid probate, add a name to a bank account, do the things that our clients want. We need a power of attorney that has all those powers listed in it. And unfortunately, in both instances this past week, the powers of attorney didn't have the right powers in them. One of them looked like it meant to do the right thing by including something called a statutory gift rider, which is a good thing, which means that I might be able to help the client move money without contacting their loved one in the hospital, who obviously can't transact. But they didn't actually initial the sections they were supposed to initial. It wasn't witnessed the way it was supposed to be witnessed. And, you know, I don't want to sound like this is an infomercial for using Herzog. It isn't. It's an infomercial for using estate planning attorneys for estate planning things and real estate attorneys for real estate things. But thankfully, the two people I met in the hospital on Wednesday and on Friday, they had their mental capacity and they were able to sign new powers of attorney with me. Otherwise, we were going to do a different thing, Dan, called a guardianship. We were going to spend a lot of money to get to the same place where someone can transact on behalf of somebody else. And if you're going to do a power of attorney, you have to do it the right way. The stakes are incredibly high. We just got lucky. And let me put a finer point on it, if I may, Dan.
You may.
When I went, thank you. I went to Samaritan Hospital, right? I met with the family, and actually it was a Zoom that I met them on in the morning, and it became clear that this person in the hospital sounds like they have dementia, maybe a UTI, a urinary tract infection. They're on some different medications. The hospital is telling the family he can't stay here, he's got to go, and there's issues with whether or not he can get rehab or not, which we're trying to hash out right now. You know, basic family, wife, two kids, right? Kids are grown. Everything's joint with the wife, which is kind of the problem if we're in a world of Medicaid planning, because if someone needs a nursing home and we're looking towards Medicaid to cover the costs of the nursing home, Medicaid's going to look at what husband, who is the client in this instance, what he's got in his column, what assets are in his column. And if I want to be able to move that house and move it into mom's name or a trust for mom eventually, I need money to be moved around or an asset that's just in his name, that's obviously in his column for assets, to be moved to maybe wife. That's a gift. A wife can't accomplish that. I need the power of attorney to allow it, because she needs to sign for him to convey that deed to a trust, as an example, if that's what we're going to do eventually, or to move money out of his individual account into a different kind of account. And so I say, you know what? I think I can make today work. And I'll see you at 12:30. I have some phone calls. I'll just make them from the hospital, and we'll make it work. I get to the hospital, and I'm greeted by a administrator who will not let me up because I'm an attorney. And it wasn't the guest policy. I could be a guest, but they said, we don't believe he has the mental capacity to do anything, and you can't go up there to meet with him. And I said, well, okay, that's not your call. Whenever I'm meeting with someone for a document signing, I'm always gauging whether they have the capacity. There have been a lot of instances where I've said to families, I'm sorry, I can't notarize this. Your dad can't sign this right now. He doesn't have the capacity. And they say, well, who's going to know? And I say, well, I'm going to know. And that's how it works. So sorry. And so I explained to the administrator, look, I go up there and I'm going to talk to him. And if I gauge that right in that moment he's got the capacity to sign, he can sign whatever that is. And if someone wants to challenge that later, they may. But whether or not you evaluated him 2 days ago, that doesn't mean what his mental state is today at 12:30. And she said, well, that's great and all, but I need to call the attorney for the hospital, which she did. And about 45 minutes later, I got my phone calls in, by the way, which it all worked out. 45 minutes later, she said, I can go in. And wouldn't you know it, the guy was sitting up, joking around. He was in a bad state a couple days earlier, probably because of the UTI that he was dealing with. Still had some cognitive issues, but he was certainly, in my mind, able to sign a power of attorney. He knew his wife and his kids, and he said, yeah, I know I'm going to be here for a little bit. I'd like her to be able to do things. A real conversation, power of attorney was done. Do you know how close that could have been, Dan, to there's never going to be a power of attorney signed and we're going to need to do a guardianship? It was like a coin flip and just got lucky. Maybe it was because it was before lunch for him or right after lunch or, you know, those. I don't need to be lucky. I don't want my clients to get lucky like that. And that's why it's so important in our world to do things like have a basic power of attorney, a good one, with other estate planning documents that are age appropriate and fact pattern appropriate. But it becomes really, really important. And I just wanted to make sure I got that all out there. I actually have a long list of things to talk about, Dan, but you're here with us, so I want to also make sure we talk about real estate as well as phone calls, 518-476-5900. Dan, your world, and we've talked about this before, if someone's planning on selling one day, you want them to be prepared to sell one day. And if they say to you, hey, we just put the house on the market, you want that client to be able to answer basic questions for you and be prepared. For example, you want your clients to be able to fill out a property inspection report or property disclosure report, whatever it's called, right? Or you want to know whether they have an idea of what their mortgage balance is, whether they have any tax liens that you should know about. So can you go into the types of things that you want, particularly your sellers right now, for them to be prepared with when they're starting to sell their home?
Yeah, so for sellers, we talk about, as you mentioned, the property condition disclosure statement. This is a questionnaire. It's got 48 questions about the nuts and bolts of the property and, you know, whether the seller is aware of any defects with the property. And a lot of sellers I found lately don't want to fill this out because they're afraid of what could happen down the road. Like, well, maybe they're going to tell me that I knew about this, but I really didn't, and they think I'm lying, and then they're going to sue me. So situations I've had lately are sellers not filling out that form, and if they don't fill it out, they've got to give a credit of $500 to the buyer, and to them, it's worth it so that they don't have to think about this, a year from now. Is, well, if they find something wrong with the foundation and they're going to tell me that I knew about it, I'm seeing a lot of that lately. If the property is in a trust or part of an estate, the seller is exempt from having to fill that out. And so you talked about using estate attorneys or, you know, for estate administration, that type of thing, and I think it's so important to use real estate attorneys. for real estate transactions, because I've had situations where attorneys are telling me that we've got to give them a credit of $500 because there's no property condition disclosure, but my client is a trust. And I can tell them I'm blue in the face that, no, we don't have to give this credit to you. And then I pull out the section of law that it is. It's section 463 of the real property law for those listening at home.
Can you repeat that? I just want to write it down, Dan. What is it, section 4?
463.
Thanks.
Yep, of course.
Now, on that form, a legit question for you. When it asks those 40-some-odd questions, the answers are, circle one, right? It's yes, no, not applicable, or unknown, right?
That is correct.
And so if there's a question, and I just filled one of these out because we have a transaction that you're handling, a sale. I don't know if there's mold. I don't think there is. I didn't even see mold, so it's definitely not yes. I can't say it's definitely no. It might be applicable. Am I just circling unknown? Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, how many of us homeowners are going up to our attics, let's say, or in the crawl spaces of our basement, looking for mold? I'm one of those people. I'm not going into my attic every week looking around. So if I were to fill this out, my answer would be unknown, because I'm not checking my house top to bottom. And I've often said to myself, well, I wonder, like, if I was ever going to sell the house, would I fill out this form? I haven't answered myself yet, but the form does cause a lot of frustration and confusion for buyers and sellers. When I get a contract, I always look for this. And if something is circled yes, it usually needs further explanation. Like, if there is a shared driveway or anything in common, like an HOA or a fence or something like that, I always make sure that there is supporting docs to go along with it. Okay, there's a shared driveway. Do we have some type of agreement, as to the maintenance and so forth? And oftentimes there's not. So what happens is we get later on into the transaction, the bank gets involved and they're going through their mortgage process, and then they're going to say, oh, we see on the disclosure there's a shared driveway. We need an agreement.
Dave, so Dan, we have a caller. We have Diana in Albany.
Good morning, Diana. How are you?
Good morning. My question is, I have worked as an executrix for my husband's will and his estate, and I've had my niece help me a lot because I can't read the stuff because of my eyes. I wish to turn all the income from that service over to my niece. How do I do that without being a problem for the possibility of me going into a nursing home?
Good question, Diana. And if you have your radio on, turn it down, because I'm getting a little bit of an echo, just in case. So,
okay.
Your help. Your sorry, by the way, for the loss of your husband. Your family member's helping you out with this, and that's very nice
of
her.
That is correct. And she is doing most of the work because I'm unable to read.
I understand. So let's go into the future, okay? Let's say 4 years from now, God forbid, you need a nursing home.
Right.
Because this is what people sometimes don't understand, how the look-back period works.
I do understand because I did it for my husband.
I see. We only are looking backwards from when we're actually applying for someone. And we know, we don't know if we're ever going to apply, so that's why it's so important to plan ahead of time. So let's just say, unfortunately, 4 years from now, you need to be in a nursing home. At right. that point, Medicaid's going to want 5 years of records, which you've done before. We'll provide 5 years of records. Those 5 years going backwards includes this conversation right now and the things that, that she's been doing for you and maybe the money that you want to give to her. And right. if it's part of the administration of the estate and the estate hasn't been settled yet, you could always have the estate give her money. So it's not you giving her money. It's the estate that has given her money. It's not because she's fantastic. She is, by the way. It's going to be because she's doing the service for you and you want to compensate her for it. You're not going to get crazy with it and give her tons of money, but you want to give her something, and that's an estate expense, right? If instead right. of her, you called our office and you asked one of our paralegals to do this work for you, we would charge you for it, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's entirely appropriate for the estate to give her money instead of you giving her money. That way it's not going to be an issue. At the same time, okay. if you did decide to give her, or you want to give her money just because she's great in general and forget about the estate, normally when we apply and we do that five-year look-back period, they're only looking for certain kinds of transactions. Normally, they're going to look for about $1,500 to $2,000 or more per transaction. They're usually not going to
be more than
smaller
that.
Transactions. Well, we could talk offline in terms of how you may want to structure that, but I would go with having money through the estate because it sounds like she's doing real work that should be compensated. There's other things to think about when someone's receiving money. She's not doing it as the fiduciary of the estate. She's, you know, spending time and helping you out, and maybe is that income, is that not income? That's for another day, I guess, to talk about, or another phone call. But I don't think there's a problem with it. And just to be sure that everything's fine, I suggest you not need a nursing home for 5 years. Just
that's
case.
What I would prefer.
That, I like that, too.
One other question, because I didn't get this clearly. Does that mean I should come in before the estate has been cleared up, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if you do have to come in. But if you want to talk more about it and kind of get into the nitty-gritty, love to meet with you and, you know, no cost, and we'll just talk.
Well, you... I'm a client already, so.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, come on in.
Okay.
I should
do it before so that the money could be given to her.
Before you settle the estate, yeah. If we want that to be one of the options, I would go that route.
What if it's at taxes already?
What if it's?
Already in the tax. The taxes are already done. But the.
Oh, yeah, I don't mean
but
his
the payments
taxes.
Haven't been made out.
I understand, yeah. I'm not worried about those kinds of taxes. I'm worried about whether your niece would have to report anything that she got from the estate. That's all.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
For the call.
Right. I'll be in. Bye-bye.
All right.
All right, we're at our half-hour break. We'll take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kabikian.
My name is Dan Glasser.
And as I mentioned earlier, Dan and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm with offices in Albany and Saratoga Springs in the middle in Clifton Park and a little further south down in Kingston. Here every weekend talking about estate planning and elder law and every now and then real estate. We do have Dan on the phone here. 518-476-5900 is the number if you have a question or comment or just want to talk about the big Sox win yesterday. Why not, right, Ben?
I agree.
There you go. We do have webinars coming up, Dan. And, you know, the idea that I've run into a lot of people who don't have powers of attorney or didn't do it the right way really makes me want to shout from the mountains how important it is to get your ducks in a row and get some information. And when you can get free information and things like free consults, well, that sounds pretty good to me. We do have webinars coming up this week on Wednesday, Webinar Wednesday, that is, October 13th at 10 a.m. We're going to be talking about, well, not a fun webinar for sure, what to do when a loved one dies. This is getting into estate administration, and by kind of knowing what happens, it's going to help you prepare to make sure that some of the pitfalls that could happen won't happen. At 2 p.m. on the 13th, it's going to be about elder law basics. Things like Medicaid trust, things like how you can get care in your own residence or in your own apartment or in that room that you're in at your kid's house, and how Medicaid has a program for that and so on. And then the following week is our webinar week, and that means that every single day, the week of October 18th at 2 p.m., we're going to have a webinar. And if 2 p.m. doesn't work for you guys, by the way, just let us know. We'll change it to whatever time you want. I'm kidding. You could get them all on demand. They all will be recorded for you. And happy to either give you that latest and greatest version or one that's maybe a month or two old. But the topics, the week of October 18th on Monday, 2 p.m., estate planning for young families. Dan, you're a young family. I'm a young family.
I am.
Well, we're youngish. I don't know how young we are anymore. We're youngish. We're going to do a new webinar, Estate Planning for Youngish Families, I think. So Estate Planning for Young Families, 2 p.m. Monday. On Tuesday at 2 p.m., that's October 19th, the top 10 reasons to plan your estate. And I think we might even throw in an 11th reason just for kicks later on. Wednesday, October 20th, 2 p.m., Wills versus Trust. This is, I think, probably our most popular webinar because it hits the biggest areas of misinformation. Does a will go through probate? Well, if it means anything, it's gotta. And having a will does not avoid probate. What's the difference between a will and a trust? Good questions. We'll see at Wednesday, October 20th, to answer them. Thursday, October 21st, it's Aging in Place. It's a webinar specifically about community Medicaid, the idea of getting care wherever you are. We call it care on your couch. And then lastly, on Friday, it'll be about estate planning and Medicaid myths, a little bit of hodgepodge covering some of those other topics as well, the top areas of misinformation, let's call it, that we hear from our clients. If you want a seat at one of those webinars that you can just watch while you're at work, I guess, or at home, you can log on herzoglaw.com and click the register tab for the webinars. You can call our office at 518-465-7581 to register. You could also call to schedule an appointment or a phone consult or a Zoom or what have you. And you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com. So a lot of really good webinars. We've been doing them all throughout the pandemic. We do miss being in person, Dan, but it's really important that people know these. I don't have a problem going to hospitals. We kind of do whatever we have to for our clients, but where it's really unnecessary, even when they do some planning, it just wasn't the right planning. It kind of requires us to then get lucky, like I was mentioning, and we don't want to depend on luck. That's not a plan. A plan is having your documents in place. Whether by us or anyone else, you got to, you know, estate planning, elder law attorneys for estate plans and elder care plans. So, Dan, there's a couple things on. I had a long list of stuff that I wanted to talk about, and unfortunately, this one's not a real estate one. I hope you don't mind.
I don't mind, Dave. Please proceed.
Thank you. So one of the clients that I met with, elderly gentleman, his wife is in a nursing home, and he came in with his sister, who is a client of Herzog. So she said, you got to go come talk to Dave, Harry, whoever. And we're talking, and, you know, I'm getting the basics, and his wife was at the hospital, and then she went over into rehab and now is in a nursing facility, not getting rehab done. And I looked at the client questionnaire, and I said, okay, this is not a problem. You know, we'll get her qualified for Medicaid, and we'll just move some things over to you. And you know, if she could do a power of attorney at some point, that might not be a bad idea. But the way things were titled, Dan, we were going to be able to be okay. You know, like the house, for example, was just in husband's name, not in husband and wife's name, which isn't common, but worked out, right? So power of attorney, I didn't have to run to the nursing home to do a power of attorney there. And we got to talking, and I said, so let me get the timeline in. She went in this past June to the hospital, and he said, no, she went last June. And I said, what do you mean? And I said, when did she go to the nursing home? And he said, last September. And that's when my mood changed, because I already knew what was happening. He didn't realize what was happening. This guy has been private paying for his wife in this nursing home. And he's been doing that because the nursing home told him he has to private pay for her. And if not for his sister saying, hey, you really should talk because you're kind of running low on funds, you should talk to Dave, Harry, Herzog, right? I think she is a Harry client. Schedule-wise, he met with me. So it turns out that he's been private paying, and if I met with him a year ago, Dan, 1 year ago, same conversation, I would have gotten his wife qualified for Medicaid last October, which means he would not have private paid the last year. He's not a Vanderbilt or a Rockefeller, okay? He's not the monopoly man, right? He doesn't have lots of assets. He's been private paying because he wants to take care of his wife because he was told that's the only option he's got. But in fact, he had a lot of other options, including her being qualified for Medicaid without him private paying. Money could have been moved just into his column. We could have applied for Medicaid. She would have gotten approved. Because of the low amount of assets, relatively speaking, that they had and his amount of income, we would be able to move over to his column, her income. We would have been able to avoid any ability of the county to try to ruin the plan, because he needs money to live off of, right? Of course he needs money to live off of, and he doesn't have a ton of money. And I was very close to just calling that facility and carrying them a new one, Dan, because I don't do that, by the way, but because this nice guy lost $144,000 over the last 12 months, because he got some bad advice. And the worst part about it to me is that it's not like he could say, hey, this attorney committed malpractice. He never dealt with an attorney. That facility didn't have a duty to him. They didn't violate any duty. They just didn't tell him the whole story. They weren't obligated to tell him any of the story, right? But they made him believe that this was the only choice he had. And so we're going to get his wife qualified for Medicaid. It will be effective November 1st. From that point on, he will not be paying this facility. And it's a real cautionary tale for everyone out there, echoing everything we've always talked about, which is, you know, no one should, you know, like, we're professionals at dealing with this, right? One of the things I've always said is I don't want to, like, know my way around a certain wing of a hospital. Right. That means I'm spending too much time. I'm not a doctor. Right. I don't want to have that much detail. And if there are certain experiences in life, you're just going to go with what people tell you. And if your elderly wife goes to the hospital, and that's new, and when the hospital administrator says, well, you're going to go to this nursing home and rehab. Don't worry. Medicare is going to take care of it, right? This is where she's going to go. You say, okay, thank you. But you're going to thank them because they're doing you a favor, you think. And then when the nursing home administrator says, all right, well, here's the deal. This is the bill. You're going to pay the bill. We're going to take good care of her. And when you get down to this amount, that's when, if you'd like, we could apply for Medicaid for her, right? You're going to say thank you to that person because you think they're doing you a favor because you're listening to them. They're the experts. They're the nursing home, right? Like, of course they know. What does this guy know? And unfortunately, they didn't tell him the whole story. They didn't say, hey, you should go talk to an elder law attorney. Now, let me give you the opposite of this or the converse of it. I went to another nursing home this past week on Thursday in Kingston. And in that instance, the nursing facility gave our client's wife, or significant other rather, a large packet of things for Medicaid. And one of the things in the packet was a list of elder law attorneys they may want to talk to. And the letter said, we can handle this for you. You can gather these things and we can help you out with this. However, if you decide to use an elder law attorney, please let us know so we can be in touch with them. Right? So that way someone at least knows, hey, maybe I should be talking to them. They gave me a list of six attorneys. I might as well kick the tires on this and see what there is here, right? I'm not saying the nursing home should tell the world how to not pay them, but there's a certain way to kind of do it where it seems a little more palatable. And so sorry for the rant, everybody, but it really ticked me off because if it's a fact pattern where someone's got tons and tons of money, okay, maybe it doesn't cause a lot of damage, but if this gentleman is with us for a long time, a decade, he's going to have a tough time because he just lost $144,000, and that's not okay. So there you go.
You're right. That's not okay.
Thanks, Dan.
How often does that situation come up in your experience?
So this week just was a whammy of them where there are three or four times where clients either got lucky or in some instance like this one did not get lucky or something like that. There are a couple places, I won't mention them by name at all, but where it tends to happen a little more frequently. And it's one of those things where you don't, like if you see they say in New York City, right, if you see a cockroach, there's a lot of cockroaches you didn't see, right? There are a lot of other things there. You don't even want to think about it, right? When we find out about some of these things or it's presented to us, it's because, you know, he was fortunate enough to have a sister who was a client that finally got him in to talk to us. So it's not a real frequent thing. But I'd say maybe, you know, once every month or two, something like this happens. And you know, another version of it that we talked about on the radio a lot, not with you, but I know I've talked with Harry about it a lot of times. And it's the worst kind of fact pattern. It's where the facility says, okay, listen, when you get down to $40,000, that's when you want to engage an attorney or that's when we could do the Medicaid application for you. We'll do it for free. So the nursing facility is going to do the application, all the work, right? When I tell a client, hey, it's going to be somewhere between $8,000 and $15,000 to do this thing, and you're going to choke up your food because you can't believe how expensive it is, then the nursing home says it's going to be free. Well, that sounds really nice, right? Now, there's a lot of work involved, and when we quote a price on it, it's because there is a lot of work to do. In this instance, a family comes in. They say, okay, well, you know, dad's been in the nursing home for, you know, a year and a half. We're finally down to this amount. And already my stomach's turning. Already I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to talk about this on the radio because someone got kind of bamboozled here. But part of the Medicaid application, as we talked to Diana on the phone a couple minutes ago, there's a 5-year look back period. If she called again, she'd tell you, you are providing the last 5 years of everything to Medicaid. That's what, you know, our paralegals do. And we, in the consult, ask, all right, well, listen, I mean, I know it won't help anything, but I really wish we talked a year ago. We could have done some things there. it is what it is. We're here now. We can help you if you'd like. You don't need us to help you, but if you'd like, we could help you. One of the things we need to know, though, is have there been any large transfers from Dad in the last 5 years? Right, standard question that Mike or Jessica asks in our office. And Dan, their face went whiter than pale. And they said, what do you mean? And that's when Mike and I looked at each other. We said, uh-oh. So tell us, what were the transfers that took place in the last 5 years? And whether they were told by someone else or I don't know what, why or how, but they used some of Dad's money and gifted themselves money. One of them paid off a mortgage. One of them, used it for kids' college tuition. And we had to tell them that not only could they have contacted us a year ago to try to save money, but the fact that there were transfers that took place in the last 5 years that were sizable, that are not going to result in a penalty, it would mean that even though Dad's down to 30, 40 grand, they're going to have to private pay for him. There's going to be a penalty associated with those gifts that goes 12 more months. So they're going to have to private pay 12 more months, Dan, where the nursing home cost was about 14 grand at the time. That's $168,000 they're going to have to come up with, right? And the kicker is, I could take a blackboard out to show people, but we're on the radio, so I can't. If we met with them a year earlier, right, we could have basically done this gift and loan plan to use the money Dad still had to make up for the money that they had gifted themselves. We could have kind of had that counteract one another to basically get them, again, qualified a lot earlier. I guess the easiest way to say it. And it's another, but they have no recourse against anyone. They didn't take legal advice that they went against. There was no legal advice. And it really echoes the point. You've got to use an estate or elder law attorney. It does not need to be Debbie, Jamery, me, or Harry. It could be. I'd love it if it was. But there are a lot of very good people who specialize in this area. And you need someone who you cannot listen to the facility that stands to make more money if you're private paying as being the advice that you're going to take. And more importantly, you can't sue them if they were wrong because they didn't have a duty to be straightforward with you and honest with you. Right? It's not like a doctor screwing up. It's not like if I screwed up something, right? I gave bad advice. I was wrong on a legal matter. There's malpractice that exists. So it's unfortunate. And maybe it helps other people, get their, together and pre-plan first of all. So that way, it's a lot easier if there is a nursing home one day. But certainly, we tell people 5 years ahead of time is great. 5 days ahead of time is better than not even contacting us because there's always something we can do. The level of how good that something is depends on how early we did things, right? The ability for a doctor to treat something that ails you depends on how early he knew that that condition existed. The earlier you plan, that prevention, that planning is really going to help in the long run. And Dan, I appreciate you allowing me to blow this up a little bit. I'm sure there's things like that in your world, maybe not as dramatic with as fine of a point on it. But I could think of a fact pattern where it can bite people and if they don't do things the right way. You have a neighbor. And the neighbor says, hey, do you mind if I put my shed right here? I don't know. It might be your land. It might be land. But this is kind of the place I'd love to have it. And, you're not selling your house. I'm not selling my house. Do you mind? And you say, sure. Right? I know your brain's already working on how that could colossally mess things up if one of those properties sells one day. Right? That happens all the time.
It happened on a file I had last year. We had an issue with a shed.
So, tell me about it.
Yeah, so I had the buyer, and it turns out that and they just happened to get a survey. Not a lot of buyers these days get surveys for resales. Of course, when they're building a house, the survey is necessary.
but he wanted a survey, and it's a good thing he got one, because it turns out his neighbor's shed, half of it, was on his property. And it was a big yard. So, I mean, it wasn't getting in the way or anything. It was just, I had explained to him, like, this could be a problem even if you don't care about it. You want to think about the future, like, well, what if you sell the property a year from now or 5 years from now? You know, someone can require that shed be moved. They ended up fixing it, you know, because we've got a lot of leverage. You know, we're not closing until this is moved. And everyone played ball, but, you know, title issues are not pleasant to deal with. But when you do have to deal with them, just like you were saying with Medicare, Medicaid, work with an attorney that knows what they're doing about this stuff. When working out title issues, really important to work with an attorney that has experience with real estate. Saves time and saves money.
Dave, Dan, yeah, we have Dave, Dan, we have another caller. We have Sarah in Colony.
Hey, Sarah. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a friend that she doesn't have any living heirs or anybody to help her. She needs a nursing home, but a lot of them are private pay. So some of them are. I found some of them that were Medicaid. Number one, can she keep any? She has Medicaid, but she hasn't had it for 5 years. Can she keep? What would be the limit on how much she could keep? If she, you know, just for her own personal expenses. Number one, and number two, what is the process of her actually getting into a place that would take her Medicaid?
Both really good questions. So the resource cap and resources are cash, bank accounts, CD, savings bonds, stocks, property, unless it's exempt. $15,900 is the resource cap for somebody. And, you know, the retirement, for example, isn't considered a resource. There's certain things that if they're in payout status aren't going to be a resource. But that's the number. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I would guess, I don't know the books of every single nursing home, and I know some of the nursing homes will only take applications for people who have a certain amount of money. Some of those do exist. But in the capital region, I would say 80 to 90% of any skilled nursing facility has the majority of their beds filled by people who are getting Medicaid.
Okay. Really?
The majority.
I called a couple, and they said that they didn't take it, and because I had a book that said profit only, so I was assuming profit only would mean that they, you know, that they only take private pay.
There are a couple places, like it's their business model, so Medicaid's going to not pay as much as someone private pays, and that's why the facilities, as an example, like to get private payers in. If the bed's the same bed, they want someone who's private pay and paying $14,000 instead of getting Medicaid to pay $75,000 for that bed. And a lot of times facilities will have questionnaires that people fill out. And, you know, if they don't like what they see, there's no bed available, et cetera. Sometimes they want someone to be able to private pay for a month or two before they inevitably apply for Medicaid. Because the thing is, even if you're private paying at a nursing home, right, at some point, if you live long enough, you're going to be on Medicaid. And sometimes people, a couple months in, realize that they talk to us and we tell them how we could get them qualified. They're still getting the same care. There are some facilities that are more Medicaid than others. A lot of times people refer to, you know, state facility. I don't want to go to some state facility. You don't necessarily have to. I mean, the some of the best nursing homes in the area take Medicaid, but they may not take it on day one. Again, the vast majority of their beds are going to be paid by Medicaid. So,
can I just say one other thing?
Yeah, sure.
when she goes, she has a lot of medical problems. That's why I don't think she can stay home anymore. But they keep sending her home when she goes into the hospital. Can she refuse to go home saying that she cannot take care of herself? Or can someone ask for her and say that?
So the short answer is yes on that. We actually had one of those fact patterns I was talking about earlier in the program. The hospital seems to be wanting to get the patient out as soon as possible. And we wanted to be to a nursing home that's got rehab as well, so this person could get their legs stronger. And there's been a dispute as to whether or not they should require rehab. And what we referred them to is there's an appeals process with the hospitals. There's a link I could email you with a list of people's rights in that kind of situation and advocacy groups and so on. So okay. The short answer is yes, there's things you can do. The long answer is a lot longer and a lot more detailed. And
okay.
a lot
Thank
more
you very
specific.
Much.
Thanks for your call. Dan, a couple really good calls sprinkled in with us giving our cautionary tales. I know we're up against the end of the hour here, but I do want to say to a lot of the people out there and clients, if you have a camp, if you have something that's been in the family for a good long while, it's never a bad idea to make sure that you have a accurate survey and meets and bounds description of the property, because down the road, you know, if an issue needs to be dealt with, we may not have the people who knew all the details of that change still with us. And it might be, you know, just like I say, you might want a power of attorney on our end on the real estate end. You may want to get your ducks in a row. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Great advice. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.